I am so glad to have back on the show with us this morning Nicole Hockley, who is with Sandy Hook Promise. Good morning, Nicole. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well today, thank you, and I hope you are as well.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate that. We can dive kind of right into where we're at as a nation right now. Obviously, some of the most recent events that have gone on, including at Michigan State University. I would imagine from where you're sitting, there are so many successes that don't get brought up from Sandy Hook Promise, and we could talk about that in a minute, but is it frustrating to continue watching patterns go on, similar to what happened at Sandy Hook, still continuing today in 2023?
It's incredibly frustrating because we know that there are solutions, that this is actually fully preventable, all of these acts of gun violence, and yet we're just not focused on the solutions enough. And, you know, at the moment this year, we have had so many mass shootings already and school shootings that at the moment it looks like this could be like a year of the biggest volume ever, which I think last year was the biggest volume. So we keep increasing the amount of violence without increasing our focus on the solutions and ensuring that our legislators focus on the solutions as well.
What are some things that Sandy Hook Promise is really focusing on? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, for many in the title, people may assume that they understand really the focus from Sandy Hook Promise. But like one of the things I've really learned from you, Nicole, is that like intervention at an early age and learning how to speak up and talking to our kids and helping them to know the signs as well are just some of the big things that still may not be addressed across the nation and could make a big difference in combating this problem.
That is so very true. A lot of people do make assumptions about what Sandy Hook Promise does and doesn't do, but we really are focused on education, teaching kids how to be inclusive and kind, which they all want to do anyway. We just give them strategies to continue learning that and practicing that every day, but also strategies on how to recognize when someone needs help and could be at risk of hurting themselves or someone else, and then take action. And that's where we're seeing real success. And this is, we're talking about days, weeks, months, or years before someone picks up a weapon to commit an act of violence. This is really upstream violence prevention, and that is critical to preventing violence and creating this shift from this normalization of violence that we see every day into something that actually changes the way that we deal with these issues.
I'm curious, Nicole, what you think, like here in Connecticut, for example, and again, I can't speak for all states because I don't cover them all, but like here in Connecticut, one of the things that really frustrates me is when you look at some of our districts where we have higher volumes of gun violence, a Hartford, a Bridgeport, mm-hmm. a New Haven, a Waterbury even. One of the things I notice is just at the educational level, we've got classrooms with 28 children and one educator, and we are having a hard time even getting good teachers. We're having a hard time mm-hmm. keeping kids in school. So absenteeism is very high. We know mental health is a huge problem. And I just wonder, you know, what Sandy Hook Promise or even yourself, what you think about focusing more on just the basics that seem to be missing for children and could be a huge factor in why they even turn to things like gun violence.
Yeah, that is so true. We definitely need more support for kids and things like social emotional learning that help foster this sense of resiliency, inclusiveness, looking out for each other, and how to regulate your emotions, how to give words to the way that you're feeling. These are things that the basics that do need to be taught to kids so that they know how to express their fears, their anxieties, their angers without resorting to violence. And this is proven to work. We know that people give off warning signs as well. That's also proven to work. So more focus on this upstream element to prevent violence and other acts of harm, that is going to have the biggest amount of success. But we do need to have our teachers trained in how to incorporate this into their curriculum. We do need more mental health professionals supporting schools. So that is where we need to make an investment in our youth by providing the correct supports around them in their schools, homes, and communities, but particularly within their schools.
Nicole Hockley is the co-founder and CEO of the Sandy Hook Promise Foundation, and she's here right now just talking about sort of the state of our country, where we're at with gun violence, and if we're doing a good enough job protecting our children in schools. And something I would love for you to comment on, Nicole, is talking about see something, say something. We know that's a big thing, especially in the month of March. So we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. But first, I was just curious if you could share, you know, some of the great things that came out of Sandy Hook Promise since it was created 10 years ago. You know, like you talk about the intervention that's put into schools, not just in Connecticut, but across the country. What do you have some data or some statistics or just things you could share with us that have come out of Sandy Hook Promise and the work that it's doing?
Absolutely. Sandy Hook Promise is really the first organization that focused at a national level on how to teach youth to recognize the signs and take action. So, and we do that with our Know the Signs programs, which includes Start with Hello, Say Something, and Say Something with the Anonymous Reporting System. To date, we have trained at least 18 million youth and adults have participated in at least one of our programs. We have well over 4,000 student clubs that we help run in states across the country that work to sustain the programs, but also really lead the way in terms of their schools and what they want to see for school safety. And we've had a lot of impact. All of those trainings have led to, you know, we have research that shows how kids are more likely to say something, to be an upstander. They feel safer in school because of it. There's reduced bullying and isolation. But also we have the real stats that come through our Say Something Anonymous reporting system, and that includes several thousand mental health interventions, plus over 400 saves from suicide, which we know is one of the top killers of youth today. And just last week, we stopped our 14th credible school shooting plot as a direct result of our programs.
Which is nothing to scoff at. I mean, those are incredible accolades in 10 years. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. If you were to go to sandyhookpromise.org and you click on Say Something, there's a statistic on here. And Nicole Hockley, I know you're very familiar with it, but for you, the listener, mm-hmm. this morning, it says in 4 out of 5 school shootings, the attacker told people of their plans ahead of time. That's a very Correct. Chilling statistic, and it's one of the biggest reasons why Sandy Hook Promise created Say Something as a program mm-hmm. and even a week dedicated to it in March. What can you tell us about that?
You know, that stat has stayed with us for a long time, and it's been confirmed annually with Secret Service reports and reports that come out at a national level in terms of really that the best way to prevent violence is by saying something, because if you recognize, once you learn how to recognize warning signs, they are almost always there. I think it's actually more than 4 out of 5. I think it's 4 out of 5 school shooters at the moment. But in terms of mass violence, I think the most recent report basically says in every instance there is leakage or warning signs. So that being trained in how to recognize that and take action, that is the best way to prevent an act of violence from happening. There are other things that you can do if an act of violence is occurring in that moment, but prevention is really what it's all about, and that is the way that we're going to stop these tragedies and losses of life from happening.
And I know with Say Something, this program is really targeting both middle and high school students, which is super effective, and you can really cover so many kids across the nation. What are some of the warning signs or things that, you know, like if you're a teacher listening this morning and they're thinking, okay, I know this is a no-cost program. I know that this would make a huge difference, but are my kids too young? Is this going to scare them? What exactly does the curriculum look like? What can you tell them? You could give kind of just a footnotes version of what they'd be getting in this program.
Yeah, the program training is really you can do it yourself from our digital learning center, so a teacher can really adapt the curriculum to their own audience, or we can obviously provide the training. And I do want to say, yes, our target is middle school and high schoolers, but we are piloting right now an elementary school version, so which is very age appropriate. We're actually piloting that in Hartford Public Schools right now and hope to be rolling that out next year. So there will be say something that's available for the K through 12 environment, scaffolded appropriate to age. But some of the warning signs that we talk about, we're definitely not here to scare kids. This is about empowering them to help others. And that's a good feeling. You know, that's not a scary feeling. But some of the signs that we teach to look for are, is someone constantly being bullied or isolated? Has someone withdrawn? For perhaps an older child, are they giving away things? Are they threatening to harm themselves? Are they saying things like, you'd be better off without me, or I don't want to be here anymore? Have they gone through extreme changes in terms of their behavior, their approach to school and academics, their activities, their friends? And, you know, these are signs that say something's going on in that child's life. It's not saying they're going to become a school shooter. It's not saying they're going to try to harm themselves, but it's saying something's going on. And that's when we need to really, you know, get below the surface level of what we're seeing and talk to that child and get them help. And that could be telling a trusted adult, using an anonymous reporting system to say, I think this person needs help. And then you can leave it to the experts to really understand what's going on and check in with that child. So it's not to scare, it is to help. But then we're very clear about when an overt threat is made. If someone says, don't come to school tomorrow, I'm going to shoot up the school. And believe it or not, people do say that. And that is one of the things that we hear a lot about in the anonymous reporting system. We also teach the kids, if you see a threat like that, you have to act immediately and take it seriously, because too many kids think they're just joking. They wouldn't put it out on social media if they were really going to do it. They're just being dramatic. No. When someone says something, you need to take it seriously and do something about it, because there's something going on there and you need to get that person some help. Don't just look away.
Well, it's also pretty ironic, or maybe this was intentional, that the Say Something Week aligns with March, which is Acts of Kindness Month. And mm-hmm. and I do think sometimes, you know, like I loved what you said, Nicole, that no, if you point out that something is off, it doesn't mean that person is going to be a danger to themselves or their society. But it does mean just being open-minded and understanding that people are going through rough times and just being aware yeah. and not being so self-centered, or not allowing bullying, for example, to go on. I mean, there's such mm-hmm. a deeper, you know, meaning. Obviously, school shootings, that's the worst of the worst. There is nothing worse than that. But just the day-to-day online bullying and in-person bullying and what we've seen get worse and worse could probably be combated a lot better if we even taught our kids, like you're saying, at the elementary level, to spot, like, hey, that kid used to be really happy, now all of a sudden they're really not. Or, hey, that person used to have a lot of friends, now I'm noticing they walk the hallways all the time. Like, mm-hmm. those kinds of things, if you could teach a first or second grader to notice that, it could change them, too, in the long run, of how they treat people and how they allow others to treat people. So
exactly.
Yeah.
It's about getting people help, and it's also about creating good people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we instinctively want to help each other. And sometimes we just don't know how, or it can feel awkward, or you're afraid that someone's going to get in trouble if you say, hey, this person said that or whatever. And we need to actually let our kids know it's an act of kindness to get someone help. Mm-hmm. It's an act of kindness to recognize when someone's going through something and to help do something about that. So this isn't about snitching or tattling. This is about helping. And kids instinctively want to do that. We just have to validate that and help them practice the tools to do that.
Yeah. And again, you have so many resources right at your fingertips. If you go to sandyhookpromise.org, where it's Say Something, they have a tab for Say Something, and you scroll down to the bottom. It's very easy. It's no cost, and you could register mm-hmm. right there. Every year, it says so on the page, every year thousands of schools and youth organizations across the nation participate in Say Something Week, and it really celebrates the importance of trusted adults and people just in your community looking out and reporting things that just seem out of the ordinary. So hopefully you will get involved with Say Something Week. Like I said, the resources are right here at your fingertips, sandyhookpromise.org. And Nicole Hockley, I want to thank you and your entire team for the work that you do and continue to do. And we appreciate here at WICC being partners with you on that journey. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And I look forward to talking to you again.
I do too. Thanks, Nicole. Appreciate it.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the morning right now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Senator Wong. How are you?
I am wonderful. Good morning to you, Melissa.
I'm glad to have you here. I was just talking a few minutes ago about Governor Lamont's announcement over the weekend, the launch of a wrong way driving public awareness campaign. I know that the state has already invested millions of dollars in new technology to try and stop people from continuing on if they get on the ramp the wrong way. What is really the purpose, though, of this campaign? I know it's going to be all over different media like television, radio, billboards, but what does this campaign look at, and how much money is being invested in it? What can you tell us, again, just kind of introducing you, especially if people weren't aware, as a ranking member of the Transportation Committee?
Well, without a doubt, it is absolutely a bipartisan effort, at least for us in the Transportation Committee. I was at the governor's press conference because, first and foremost, wrong-way driving fatalities are preventable. That is the true sadness and tragedy of this, is these are preventable accidents that occur. And we acutely felt the loss of a colleague.
Right.
A legislative colleague, Hugh Williams, who lost his life to a wrong-way accident earlier this year. But also, we need to remember the countless others that have lost their families, their loss in holidays and birthdays. These are completely preventable. And this is what we're trying to do, is to raise the awareness. Now, the governor has committed bond money to be able to implement. And the press conference was at one such location in Southington. And what we had were flashing lights, prominent displays of wrong-way signs, but really just kind of the focus in addition to physical efforts, such as, and coincidentally at the same time, in the Transportation Committee, we just passed out that exact day, timing-wise, the exact day we passed out a bill in a bipartisan effort talking about being able to put rumble strips that mm-hmm. alerts people if they're going the wrong way, increasing the amount of exits that are potentially high risk, and installing these kind of lights and warning, but also most importantly of all, awareness and education. And that's what this program the governor is touting about, to kind of raise awareness, educate people, and really make a cultural change among our peers. That when we're out, and that understanding that impairment, whether it be alcohol or distracted driving or the new phenomenon of marijuana, that nearly 80% of these wrong-way fatalities occur when people are physically impaired from alcohol in the latest incidents. This is what we really need to do, is change the cultural, raise the awareness, but also put in physical alarms to it. But, mm-hmm. but Melissa, here's the deal. You can't legislate and you can't physically design common sense.
There it is. Now, thank you for saying that, Senator Wong. And that's where my next question comes in, which is, again, you can put in as many laws as you want, but you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, essentially. So my question, and this is something I've asked the governor about, he seemed open to the idea. I've talked to law enforcement. They love the idea. I'm talking cops all over, love this idea. Why hasn't the state of Connecticut thought about retesting people? And I'm not saying that, you know, people who have taken their test when they were 16 and now they are 60, you know, wow, it's so much time since you've been in a classroom. I'm talking about just understanding the weight of your actions. And, you know, you talk about education. Do we miss this opportunity of having people in their 20s and 30s and 40s, especially, going and retesting? I mean, we make healthcare workers do it. We make health insurance workers do it. You know, we make people retest when they have to license to help people and make sure that they are taking care of people. I think if you want to operate a car, you should also be retested. I know a lot of people are back and forth about it.
Well, obviously, Melissa, you have made an impact in people as you do so well. I think one part is in our current driver's education with new drivers coming in. There is, as part of our wrong way legislation bill, that we are looking at education, such as the examples you brought up. Go into the breakdown lane, alert 911, and be very, very careful of some of the phenomenons and reactions for new drivers. Now, the challenge is getting experienced, quote, drivers back into the classroom. And that's going to be a challenge. But our compromise and adaption is this awareness and PSA and education program. We're constantly there's money being spent to do commercials, to do public awareness programs. In essence, bringing the education to the drivers rather than making them go back into the classroom.
But it would have been
ideal for them to take it, but nevertheless, this is kind of a way to get out and re-educate the danger and the awareness and the installation of common sense.
I agree, but why do you have to go into a classroom? Like, I think people are looking at it as you'd have to go back to, you know, driving 101. I don't think so. I think if you look at how other people get relicensed, for example, like I watch my father and his whole company, because they're health insurance agents, because they're brokers, they have to re-up their license. And I'm sure my dad will correct me. I think it's like every 3 or 5 years. It's something like that. And it's very, I mean, it's pretty simple. It is kind of tedious, but it's an online forum. It's some 15 or 20 questions or something like that. And it just reinstates, okay, yep, you can keep your license. This is what has changed since you last got your, you know, license re-upped. I don't know why we don't do something like that. I mean, we already have to go through the issue of either going to a DMV or resubmitting paperwork through an online forum. So I don't know why we don't say, hey, you got more than the average amount wrong. So now you should restudy this and try to take the test in like a week or something, or you know, maybe in a couple weeks. Make people work for their license to keep it. And
you know,
and
you bring
know.
Up a you bring up an interesting perspective, and I'm more than happy to share with my committee members on transportation. You're not looking for people to go back into the classroom, but to take an online kind of
like a refresher,
you know, continuing
thing.
Education, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of continuing education. Go sign up for a online course to meet the requirements every 3 years, just as you do for real estate, just as you do
Correct.
For brokers, and anything else that relates. My nurses, health practitioners,
exactly.
They all have to do a continuing education initiative, which is easily done online, but it's a refresher. And that is a great, great idea. You know, I don't think you can educate, raise awareness, and the hardest thing is changing the culture. But I believe it's possible, Melissa, because think back to 30 years ago when our culture was distinctly different, and when the Mothers Against Drunk Driving started their initiative, educating a younger group of drivers. Matt has been instrumental in changing the culture of drinking and driving.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and that is a great example. I realize we're running out of time, so Senator Wong, we are going to move to some forums that are happening. Actually, this week from 6 to 8 p.m., there's going to be a forum. You are moderating it, talking about the UI electric rate hike. And this is specifically for folks who are in the Fairfield, Easton, Trumbull, and Bridgeport area, and you know, for some who are either fixed income households or even seniors, just infuriated because utility costs are ridiculous. What can people expect? What do they need to know about this week's upcoming forum?
People feel as though they have no voice in regards to their outrageous and unsustainable electric rates increases, and we're allowing people to speak out against these rate hikes now. United Illuminating UI is requesting a rate hike in addition to the current raises in rates due to natural gas prices. So how do you do it? You know, and so we're saying we're going to have a forum where we're going to bring in experts in the area of the state's consumer policies and give you examples of what you can do and what the real impact of the proposal is going to be about. We're also going to have AARP to be able to assist a lot of our seniors that are on fixed income and have seen their utilities eat into their spendable capital. And then we looked at formerly ABCD, the Alliance, for empowerment, for community empowerment, to talk about how those that are economically struggling can get assistance and regards to the low income heating assistance, even though we have a mild winter, to be able to get some support in regards to bill collection. So we've kind of compiled these experts to be able to give people a voice. And the timing is critical, Melissa, because March 25th is the deadline for any testimony submission. And it's important because PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, is a quasi-judicial. What does that mean? It means that they can only consider their decision based upon evidence and testimony that's submitted. And if people don't write and offer their outrage and struggles and challenges, they can only base it on what these utilities present. So what we're going to present is access and opportunity for people to be able to voice their opinion, write to PURA, and make a decision. And I'm saying this because it does make a difference. People who spoke up against the Aquarian water increases of 27% for the last year was heard loud and clear because their testimony, their struggles, their frustrations were heard by PURA. And PURA, in a remarkable decision, in a draft decision, not final yet, rejected Aquarian's 27% increase and reduced their rate of cost to consumers. So people have a voice, and that's why this forum's really important, to give them some understanding, but more, give voice back. I think the best line I could leave you with is people are mad as heck, and they feel like they need to do something. This is an avenue for them to learn how they can do it. And I'm thrilled to have these various experts give people a sense of ownership, a sense that their voice is going to be heard. So it's Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., at the Fairfield Board of Education on 501 Kings Highway. Feel free to come, just register in and hear and make sure your voice is heard.
And Senator Wong, just because I know these are kind of complicated links, like I know you should register via Eventbrite, but instead of me giving out a bunch of letters and jargon, that's going to probably get lost in translation. What is your website? Because I'd imagine there are easy ways to just access these, you know, just the information about the forum. And of course,
absolutely,
if you want to register.
Absolutely. It is Senator Wong, HWANG.com. And feel free, or you can go to my Facebook, Senator Wong, and they'll have all the links active on there. But we're going to try to get it online as well, Facebook Live, so people can get this information. The bottom line is we want people to feel as though their voice is going to be heard and making a difference, because unfortunately these utilities seem to be very much tone deaf to the challenges that people are struggling with.
Yeah, and again, Senator Wong pointing out that we really, the deadline is coming up. You have until March 25th to really, have your voices heard. So again, make sure you check out this forum that's happening this Thursday starting at 6 p.m. Again, it's in Fairfield at the Fairfield Board of Education, 501 Kings Highway Cutoff in Fairfield. Thanks again, Senator Wong. Really appreciate it. I was reading an article in the magazine Image, and this dates back to only January of this year, and it says, wondering if your relationship has run its course, there are a few ways to tell, according to a well-known therapist. Breakups are inevitable. It's a fact of life. Most of us will never end up staying with the first person we thought we were in love with. But hey, maybe some of us will. Despite this, admitting to yourself that a relationship has run its course is never an easy task. In recent years, get this, divorce rates in Ireland have risen by 800%. So when you think of all the relationships that people enter into that just don't work out, it's easy to see why statistics like this exist. So if you don't feel like the spark is there anymore, here are five signs to prove your relationship is over. And you know what I thought of? Okay. Fine. You're pointing out that a relationship is not working. And again, this is advice that we get from Bob Donovan, who is a marriage consultant. Okay. Here's somebody who is not telling you that your relationship should or should not stay together. But what I prefer in having somebody like a Bob Donovan on my side versus this article that's saying, hey, yeah, there's no spark, so let's just walk away from this and let me tell you why. And when you look at these points of how do you know it's not working anymore, it sort of contradicts a lot of what we've gone over the last 3 years working with Bob Donovan, because sometimes the reason your spark isn't there is because you're in a rut, you're bored, you're not keeping it fresh. And
Ironically enough, that's what today's topic is, how to keep it fresh in your marriage, no matter how long you've been together. Bob Donovan, welcome back to the show. So glad to have you here this morning. How are you?
Yeah, very good. I missed your perky little voice along the way.
I don't know how sarcastic you're being, but thank you. I missed you. I missed you and Karen. It sounds like you had an amazing trip, though, you and Karen.
We did. Yeah, we did. You know, this for many reasons. I mean, I could talk for hours on just that. But this came to me just even last week that, you know, after 47 years in our marriage, like this trip, the six-week trip was just so unexpected the way it hit me and us. You know, never having taken more than 2 weeks off from work in my life. And even so, yes, I'm retired, but our schedules are both full. So we're retired from getting paid in a job, but still busy. So, you know, it's not like we had this open calendar. So this trip showed me a lot. That's why I came up with this topic, because as we went on this trip, it really became a little marriage adventure, because mm-hmm. we went from having a routine, having schedules, my Monday mornings and other things we both do in our house, to everything's different.
Yeah.
Like everything's different.
Right.
One bedroom condo, no routine. I had to figure out like everything was different. And because everything was different, it required us, after 47 years, to really enter into a space and an area that we weren't used to doing. Like, we really had to rely on each other and talk about everything together, everything.
How stressful was that, Bob? I mean, I know you and Karen are pros, but like, be real with me. How hard was that to first take on an endeavor saying, I'm going to do this thing that we've never done? And it is very uncharacteristic. And when you told me months ago that you were going to go for 6 weeks, just from knowing you, I'm like, you're going to go away that long? Like, what are you going to do? How in the world are you going to do that?
Well, you know us, right?
So I do.
This has been percolating for years. Okay. Mm-hmm. We really aren't good at spontaneous decisions. So this is something that's been percolating for a year. For us, right, the area was key. Like, this is not just let's go to pick the venue, West Palm Beach. Like, the area we like. But more importantly, we talked about doing this for a year because neither one of us had ever done this.
Mm.
So this decision came with, you know, years of discussion and consideration, okay? So we actually went into this, and this is really surprising. We went into this with zero expectations, like zero. We didn't know how many meals we're going to have, how many we're going to cook, how many times we're going to go out. We didn't have any expectations. So that was the first thing that was interesting, because when you go with, you know, the weather's going to be perfect, when, you know, we're going to eat out, whatever, five times a week, which is unrealistic. Like, when you go with expectations, you're going to be let down.
Right.
So the first thing was, we went with zero. Like, we didn't even know about, like, honestly, most days, you know, we do our little thing in the morning and then come together and have breakfast. And what do we do today? Like,
that's so interesting. Different. But it is funny, though, Bob, because you're experiencing something that is so exciting for, like, newlyweds or people who just move in together. You know what I mean? Like, but 47 years later, which is very stressful, because most people, when they enter a marriage or move in together or they take that next step in their relationship, this is brand spanking new for both of them. But you've raised kids, you have grandchildren, you've done job. You know what I mean? Like, this is, that's really intense. That's an intense thing.
It is. And again, it's not like we planned this. We really didn't. We planned on going in and seeing what happens. That was the first thing. And it kind of unfolded throughout the month.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, it was like, that's why this thing is full of layers and layers. But I guess, you know, to land on something for us, and we weren't stuck. You know, we had routines and everything. We weren't stuck. Some couples are, but we weren't. But still, this was a little jolt to us. This was a little, like I said, the term I use is a little marriage adventure, because we had to talk and figure out everything. And that was unexpected, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why this topic comes to mind, because even after 47 years, like, this became something fresh and new. And like, it really did kind of energize us, because we didn't expect this to happen.
And it's interesting, too, Bob, because something you and I talk a lot about on this show is being intentional. And one of the things I would imagine you and Karen had to do in this 6-week adventure was be intentional, because you have to communicate. You've got to figure out what comes next. What do we do? What do our plans look like? What are we eating? Where are we going? We're talking to Bob Donovan this morning, who is our marriage consultant, about keeping it fresh in your marriage and the importance of it. Now, what happens, Bob, if we are not intentional about keeping it fresh?
Nothing good. Okay. That's the short
true.
Answer.
There
Nothing
you go.
Good. Number one is you kind of get into this comparison thinking, right? Like, sometimes, like, if you're in a rut or routine or not happy or complacent, and you go to dinner and it seems like every other couple around you is vibrant, energized, look in each other's eyes, like, and you start like, wow, how come they're happy and we're not? How come they're having this energized conversation, we're not? So you tend to compare yourself, which is never good. You run the risk of having these crazy fantasies about what could be and what should be. You know, you do something called relational drift. You start drifting apart. You know, so again, nothing good comes out of kind of just letting life flow. Like, unless you take intentional action on your marriage, you're going to get into a rut, routine, complacent, comparison, fantasy thinking, having regrets. Mm-hmm. Really, nothing good happens unless you take responsibility and intentionality about doing something for your marriage.
And Bob, I know you've been married for 47 years, so you're proving that it doesn't matter how long you've been together or how short you've been together, getting into a rut or not feeling that connection can happen to anyone at any time. So what are some practical ways we can keep it fresh?
Yeah, well, one, I'll give you a couple. Like, certainly one is just naming it. Right. Is one is just, instead of harboring it and being internal, keeping it to yourself. And the opposite of that is just, like, you know, blasting your spouse from everything he or she's not doing. So the right way is to talk about it, is to discuss it, is to call it what it is. Like, I'm feeling like we're in routine. We're a little sloppy right now. We're a little rut. I'm feeling a little stuck. I mean, there's some things you can say. Again, don't blame me. Don't say, hey, Karen, you know, you should be. No, I'm feeling this way. And it doesn't take much. You know, so one is, the big thing really is calling it like it is. And I'll tell you what's really interesting. I deal with just hundreds and hundreds of couples over the last 15 years. Most couples, it doesn't take much. And I really mean this. Like, this doesn't take much. I'll give you just a small example of a couple I recently talked to where they really thought they were in trouble. They thought they were on the pathway to something bad, separation. Mm-hmm. They really did, because she told me when she called, her friend told me. So I went into this meeting thinking,
what happened? Right.
And as I'm listening to them, I'm like, you guys really are just stuck. Like, there's nothing you told me that is really negative or you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You're just in a rut. You're not intentional. So, you know, we did a little mid-course correction. So most couples that I see, that's where they are.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes a little mid-course correction, talk about it, and understand where we are and take a few steps to, like, decide to be a little bit more intentional about energizing a marriage. So it's really, couples think they're in way more trouble than they are with this.
Yeah, it's true. And I think another thing, we're talking to Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant here this morning, and, you know, and a marriage coach, you know, even being real about where you're at in life. So I see this a lot with my friends, because we're all in that age of having kids. And it's just, it's funny because, you know, Derek and I were just talking about this the other day. We've got this lovely Christian couple, very good friends of ours, and we have such a hard time having nights to go out to dinner with them. And it's funny because somebody you may know, Bob Donovan, it's you, have given Derek and I an assignment that we're really trying to work hard on for April. And I said to Derek yesterday, I'm like, I think we got to cancel this date night with these friends. Like, I really want to do this right with you, and I want to have the time to do it. And most of our time is taken up because we've got a 4-year-old. And we went back and forth about this. And I said, listen, like, if they're really our friends, then they're going to understand that this is where we're at in life right now, and that most of our energy goes to chase. But when I've got a snippet of time that I could be spending, you know, with you and building something with you that matters to us, that has to take precedence. And I think being realistic with your spouse about that, and also just realistic with yourself and not biting off more than you can chew, I would think is also very important with this concept of staying fresh?
Yeah, I think that's another major obstacle is people think because they can't do something, they can't go away for a week, they can't do this, they can't do that. They don't do
anything.
That's
it. Right. They do nothing. Yep. Yep. Exactly.
And, you know, doing nothing, I always say, like, nothing changes if nothing changes. So you have to really understand, given our limitations, given our budget, that's a big one, given everything we have, like, what can we do? That's the key. I literally had a conversation Saturday morning with a couple, and they were struggling with something. And I just said, look, just change your thinking into this. They had money issues. I said, instead of looking at all the things that are wrong, think about what do we need to do moving forward on managing our money. So it's how you think about it. So what do we need to do given our limitations of our life stage right now? So it's just reframing something and not letting that stop you from doing what you possible given what you have, your limitations and boundaries.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. Right? And then, of course, the importance of quality over quantity of time. That's another thing that people struggle with. And I think, Bob, you know, like you said, it's so incredible how many times, unfortunately, society will tell us that we are broken and that this person's not meant for you. And it's become very common. Now, again, is this for everybody? No. There are certainly people who entered relationships for whatever reason, and it's not good for them, you know, mentally, physically, whatever the case may be. So they had to get out of those relationships. But there are so many, and society will tell you that it's so easy and that you need to do what's right. Like, feed your inner need and self-need of I want this, and I want excitement, and I want to sleep with other people. Yeah. And we just, I think we've become so heavy with that, that we don't focus on the, hey, wait a minute, you've got something really great right here. You're just in this weird spot. You just got to kind of shimmy out of it. So I think, Bob, this is the point where everybody's different. And I think it's so important that people go to a coach or go to a consultant like you and ask, what can we do in our situation? So how do people reach out to you if they want to keep it fresh? They want to maybe find a jolt of energy that's been missing for a while. What do they do?
Yeah, you know, that's great. I really, that's a way to land on this because it's true. Like, most couples don't need much. They really don't need much. Just, a little mid-course correction. So would love to talk to anybody, email anybody. They can reach me at B. Donovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, at blackrock.org.
All right, Bob. Well, I am so glad to have you back on the show, but I'm so happy that you and Karen had this amazing adventure. It sounds like it was wonderful for your marriage and just for your time. You guys deserve it. And I'm excited to chat with you again in a couple weeks.
Love to do that.
All right, cool. Thank you so much, Bob. Bob Donovan again here on WICC, and we are keeping it fresh. Oh, yeah.